Welcome back to the Garden with Joey and Holly Radio Show. Moments away, Christy Willingham. But first, if you got problems with some Japanese beetles, Rescue has the product that can help you get them off of your plants and await and fix the problem and get them out of your garden.
Japanese beetle traps, when used properly, draw beetles away from your plants and trees. The trick is to hang them 30 feet from plants that you want to protect. That way, you lure the beetles away from the areas where they could cause damage, and then it traps them. Rescue Japanese beetle traps are the only traps with a controlled release lure that lasts the entire beetle season. Their extra large bag is welded directly to the trap and stays put even when it's full of beetles. And the Rescue Japanese beetle trap is the only trap with a reusable bag that opens and closes at the bottom. If beetle season is a bad one, just open, empty, and keep trapping the beetles with the same trap. You can find all these products at rescue.com, and they're made in the USA. Again, that's rescue.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Christy Will Help Me is the driving force behind Garden Nerd. Christy believes that gardening unifies both physical activity and healthy food choices while providing a grounding, spiritual, and creative outlet. She has dedicated herself to the study of organic gardening and its benefits. She is an author, speaker, and more. Her latest book, Grow Your Own Mini Fruit Garden, just came out this past May.
Welcome to the program, Christy.
Thanks so much. Really happy to be back, both of you.
Well, it's been a while since we've had you on the program, so we thought it was adequate time to bring you back, and we thank you for that.
And we
bring people on the program so we can learn from individuals like yourself, as well as our listeners can learn from individuals like yourself. And we would like you to share a very unique thing that you have found out about the benefits of using worm castings around your plants to control aphids.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things. Worm castings is my first line of defense when I see aphids or any other sucking insect like whitefly, mealybug, leafhoppers. Because that indicates that the plant is weak. And so in order to fortify the plant and the soil, we put down worm castings. Not only does it have a broad spectrum kind of micronutrient gift for the plants and the soil, but it also has this enzyme called chitinase, which is spelled with a CH, like chitinase, but it's pronounced chitinase for those who have not really seen that in writing anywhere. And it is, This enzyme, chitinase, happens to dissolve the exoskeletons of soft-bodied insects. So when you put it down on the soil, the plants will take it up into their systems, and then when sucking insects start sucking on the juices of that plant, they take in that chitinase, and as I tell my students, they start falling apart, and they're like, why am I falling apart? And then they leave. So it helps bring down the population. It wards them off, and it makes it a better place for your plants to thrive in your garden.
Well, and worm castings have a lot of nutrient value, and this is just an additional bonus property to such using worm castings. And you can one create their own worm castings, or is it really better to buy like a bag that's got 100% worm castings in it?
Well, I think that the best way to produce worm castings is if you have a bin at home, because, a lot of times when you buy something in a bag from a nursery, it has to go through some kind of a sterilizing process in order to kill off pathogens and whatnot. And, it's still good if that's what you can get. If you don't have room or the wherewithal to do a worm bin at home, certainly buy the bag stuff at the nursery. But if you can start a worm bin, it really doesn't take up a large footprint. So if you're unable to compost, worm binning or vermiculture is the best thing you could possibly do.
Well, talking about vermiculture, which is a form of composting is easy if you have big piles and equipment to turn it. But many of us are in small backyards with limited space, or we just can't have a big compost pile because of where we live. It could potentially invite unwanted visitors. So what are some easy ways that we can all compost that doesn't take up a large area and is more secure than a large pile?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of from my clients, actually, and my students who've come up with some really clever ways to compost. because they don't have room to, like you said, have a compost bin, or they're really worried about rats or other vermin who are going to come in and, you know, take over the place. And so what they do is they'll dig a trench, or they'll put a hole in their raised bed somewhere, and they will bury their food scraps. Now, of course, you have to bury it deep enough, but there's some other things that they do that you can do. You can either, I have some clients who put their food scraps in the freezer, and they kind of save it up until they have enough to bury. And the process of putting the food scraps in the freezer fractures the, you know, it ruptures the cells, so it already starts the decomposition process. So when you do bury them in the garden, they're going to break down a lot more quickly. Other people will put them in the blender, you know, they'll puree their food scraps and then pour that into a trench and bury it around their plant. And so that's kind of a no-fuss way of doing it if you've got a strong blender. And, or, you know, if you're planning out your garden and you want to start growing someplace next year that's different than what you have growing now, you can start that compost trench, and then next year it'll be really fertile and biologically active and ready to go.
Well, if you do that, you might want to invest in just a specific blender designed for your composting process, possibly.
Right, yeah. I think if you're careful about what you put in your blender, I have one of those really high-speed blenders that can kind of take anything, but if you're careful about your blender and don't put things in it that you wouldn't ordinarily blend up, then you're in good shape. Otherwise, yeah, a dedicated blender would be good.
Well, your new book, Grow Your Own Mini Fruit Garden, was recently published. What can our listeners expect from it when they pick up a copy, and what are some unique tip or something notable that you would want that our listeners might find interesting? And if I'm correct, did the book hit number 4 today?
Yes. Yes, it did. It got, it was ranked number 4 in fruit gardening on Amazon's bestseller list. So, and the reviews are pretty good, I have to say. So I'm really proud of this book. My previous work has focused on small space vegetable gardening, and now I get to focus on small space fruit gardening. And so it really is for people who have even just a balcony or a patio or, you know, a small yard. And it reviews all of the types of techniques that you can use and the options that are out there for growing fruit in small spaces, from fruit trees to berries and even vertical gardening and that kind of thing. So, I talk about how to choose the right fruit trees for your area with the right chill hours and you know, rootstock to make sure you're getting a tree that's going to stay small when you put it in the ground or in a container, and how to, you know, grow berries in a small location and keep them from running all over your yard, how to use vertical towers to grow strawberries and things like that, and a bunch of other things that I think people will find interesting and unique in the way that, you know, most tips or gardening advice for growing fruit trees are geared towards farmers or people with a lot of space or university agricultural endeavors, and they aren't really focusing on the home gardener. So I introduce people to backyard orchard culture and all the pruning techniques that go with it, and even some grafting tips for people who want to try that out.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, the misconception is, oh, you can't grow fruit trees unless you have 5 acres to do all this. And, you know, growing up on a farm, never thought of, you know, ever growing in a container ever, because land was very plentiful until I moved to an urban setting where books like yours teaches a whole nother realm of gardening that many people didn't know existed or could be potentially grown in a container.
Right. And like it's combination planting, where you can plant 3 or 4 trees in the same planting hole, and they're all in the same family, like, say, 4 different kinds of apples, or a plum, a peach, a nectarine, and an apricot, and they're, you know, their trunks are only 18 to 24 inches apart, and you prune the inside so there's nice enough airflow and nice room for them to grow in, but you treat it kind of as a hedge or a clump of a tree, and that way home growers can get a little bit of fruit from each of those trees throughout the growing season. And it's an extended growing season, especially if you pick something that's, you know, one variety that's an early another that's a mid-season, another that's a late-season variety. So you're not getting 400 plums all at once. You're getting a few fruits from all of those different trees throughout the growing season. Kind of cool.
That's definitely very interesting. So we're talking with Christy Wilhelmi. She's an author, speaker, educator, and she's from gardennerd.com. Some people might say fruit really isn't expensive, or I can get it from the farmer's market. Why would I grow my own? What are some good reasons to start a fruit garden? And what are some challenges one may face when starting that mini fruit garden?
Those are both really interesting questions, because I feel like all you need to do is drive by a commercial agriculture, you know, farm and watch what they're spraying on everything. And that really, for me, it's like, grow organic. And organic fruits are more expensive than if you were growing it at home. I think the other thing about growing fruits at home is that you can grow varieties that don't travel well, for like mulberry. You know, they're kind of hard to keep fresh. Those blackberries sometimes, you know, and raspberries, they don't stay well, you know, they don't stay fresh in the refrigerator. But if you're picking them out of your backyard and eating them fresh, they're so delicious. And my blackberries last in the fridge for a couple of weeks, because they haven't traveled 1,500 miles and they haven't been picked 3 weeks ago and, you know, been trucked across the state. So those are my reasons for growing fruit at home. You can also grow things like, we have this tree. It's a Mexico native. I'm here in California, in Southern California. And we have a Mexico native tree called the loquat that you'll never find in the grocery store, because it bruises so quickly and it doesn't travel at all. So sometimes fruits that are really interesting they just aren't even sold commercially. So growing them at home is your only option. So that's one of those things that I recommend people growing fruits for. And regarding the challenges, well, you know, it all depends on where you live. If you have critters of any kind, you're going to have to protect your crop. And that may mean physical barriers, you know, protecting each fruit individually, like apples, you use maggot barriers over those. I use bird netting over my berries sometimes to keep the birds away. And for rats, we have to set rat traps and that kind of thing. And that's going to be different depending on where you live. I imagine you experience a whole different set of critters than I have here in Southern California, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's got their own level of problems when it comes to rodents and insects to deal with.
Right. And it's just a matter of honing in on how to prevent them from getting to your fruit and harvesting when they're ready. You know, don't leave them on the tree or on the bush very long, and then you'll get your fruit. Then you won't.
Awesome. Well, we've really enjoyed having you on. How can people find out more about you and your great information?
Sure. You can visit gardennerd.com, and that's GARDENERD.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, in all of those places under Garden Nerd or Garden Nerd One. So Garden Nerd One on Facebook and Twitter. Instagram and Twitter. Facebook is gardennerd.com.
Your book's available in all bookstores and on your website?
That is correct. Yes. You can get autographed copies on my website, and the book sold everywhere. And, you know, anywhere books are sold, you can find it.
Well, Christy, we greatly appreciate you taking a little bit of your time today, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners.
Thanks so much. I really had fun.
Thank you.
For more information, please visit the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com.